Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. The first day outside of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, was peaceful, luckily. Activists voicing their opposition to the anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim rhetoric of Donald Trump marched through a barricaded downtown Cleveland, where security is very tight. $20 million has been spent on riot gear and equipment. Over 3,000 police, some from as far away as California, are on hand there. The city prepared space in the jail to process as many as 1,000 people a day. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security are also in town. The possible eruption of clashes during the convention is compounded by Ohio's open carry law, which allows citizens to carry loaded handguns and rifles. According to USA Today, shortly before 6 p.m. yesterday, a group of 10 men describing themselves as the West Ohio Minutemen walked through the streets openly carrying rifles and pistols, and police officers told them to, quote, be safe. Activists and civil rights groups believe that a military-style police presence and restrictions will have chilling effects on protests. But again, luckily, the first day has been peaceful. And joining us to talk about convention protests is Larry Bresler, Executive Director of Organize Ohio, an organization that supports grassroots organizers and community activists. Organize Ohio was one of the organizers of yesterday's End Poverty Now March, and Larry joins us from his office in Cleveland. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be on.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Andrew Meyer, a reporter with Youth Radio. Andrew is 22, and this is his third convention. And Andrew joins us from Cleveland. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Bill Taylor is executive of Philly.FYI. They are organizing the March for Bernie and other events during the Democratic National Convention next week in Philadelphia. And Bill is in touch with organizers across the country. Bill joins us on the line from Philadelphia. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So, Larry, I want to start off with you. You are Executive Director of Organize Ohio, and I keep saying I'm so glad that the first day was peaceful. It's really hard to believe that in an open carry state, this is the first convention where people can actually walk around with guns on the streets. Ohio Governor John Kasich says that he does not have the authority to suspend the open carry law. He got a request by the Cleveland Police Union president saying, please suspend it. He said he couldn't. Is it true that in that area outside of the convention, pro-Trump and anti-Trump protesters have no choice but to be in the same space together?
Well, there was a designated route for all marches, although we were able to negotiate something different for our march, but there was a design route that went over the bridge in Cleveland called the Lorraine Carnegie Bridge, and then makes a little turn and elsewhere, that everybody is supposed to do their marches on. And then they're basically allowed within very specific time periods. So it's almost a certainty that some of the marches that are anti-Trump and some of the marches that are pro-Trump are going to be following right after each other to some degree. And so it automatically brings together people who are direct opponents of each other, and the possibility of problems under those circumstances and conflicts are ones that are unfortunately very great.
What went on behind the scenes? As I said, the Cleveland Police Union president asked Ohio Governor John Kasich to suspend the open carry law during the convention. Did you talk with city officials about your concerns?
Well, you know, in terms of the march, I certainly talked about it. We advocated very strongly that there should not be a designated march route. They loosened it up a little bit so that things could be a little easier, but that was never changed. A much bigger problem is in this event zone, which is about now, it was originally 3 square miles, and after legal action was brought, it was brought down to 1.5 miles. But within that route, you can't carry string of a certain length, you can't carry tape of a certain length, you can't carry certain kinds of umbrellas, you can't carry sleeping bags, you can't carry knapsacks, you can't carry a squirt gun, but you can carry in that area assault rifles and handguns.
What? So you can't carry a squirt gun, but you can carry an assault rifle.
Exactly.
Why? I mean, how are they justifying this?
Well, it's because we have this open carry law in Ohio, and there was no way that they could legally do that. So it becomes incredibly hypocritical. And unfortunately, the head of the police association made this request about trying to temporarily reprieve the open carry law like a day before the convention. If they had done this a month before, many of us could have jumped on board and put a lot of pressure on the state, and we were not able to do so.
And so, again, this is in about a 3-square-mile zone?
Well, they have this event zone in the city of Cleveland where it's now a mile and a half.
Okay, a mile and a half.
A mile and a half square miles.
So even smaller.
It's smaller, exactly.
And so according to USA Today, about 10 men, actually, who said they were with West Ohio Minutemen, walked through the streets openly carrying rifles and pistols. Did you see anyone else carrying rifles at the events outside of the arena yesterday?
To this point, we have the New Black Panthers on Sunday. We're doing a march, and they were supposed to be providing the security. And they said that they were going to be carrying guns, and they didn't, which I was pleased that didn't happen. But fortunately, at this point, everything's been peaceful. We hope that continues. And to their credit, both the pro-Trump and the anti-Trump organizers have been doing whatever they can to have peaceful protests and peaceful marches.
Bill Taylor, you are in touch with organizers across the country. You have been involved in many conventions. What do you think of the way the city has handled this?
Dealing with the city of Philadelphia, my heart goes out to everybody in Cleveland, Ohio, everything from the demonstrators to the police. They're being placed in an environment that can turn deadly. This is, you know, the establishment seems to be the true enemy here, to be honest with you. We're products of our environment, and this is the environment that they're placing under. I think this strikes up tensions not only with demonstrators, it strikes up tensions with the police officers. But hearing what I heard earlier about, you know, the anti-Trump and pro-Trump organizers having a communication to make sure it's peaceful, nonviolent, even non-lethal, that in itself is, you know, just hearing that, it's kind of beautiful to hear that we, the people, can come together regardless of the difference in belief. So it seems like the energy is being focused in the right direction, but my heart goes out to everybody in Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, let's hope that this continues throughout the week, because yesterday was very peaceful, and let's hope that continues throughout the week. Andrew Meyer, you are a reporter with Youth Radio. You're just 22. This is your third convention. Tell us a little bit about what you saw on the streets yesterday, and are people on the streets talking about the open carry law? Are they concerned about it?
Hi. Yeah. So yesterday, the protests that we went and covered, they were pretty small, to be honest. There was about 200 people at each of the two that we saw, and I mean, they were small, but they were also calm and like peaceful. There was no real escalation points for the most part. There were a few small instances of like pro-Trump and anti-Trump protesters like yelling at each other. But when that happened, the police would actually come in and de-escalate the situation, which is a welcome change.
I understand that the police on bikes, they're basically putting bikes between the anti and the pro-Trump demonstrators. Is that right?
Yes. So yesterday, there was a great example of that. There was a leader of the Traditionalist Workers Party who, outside of the America First Unity rally, was getting in a yelling match with this member of the Black Lives Matter, and about a dozen cops on bikes would just come in the middle of them and put them on opposite sides of the road, and 5 minutes later, it's like it never even happened.
And so what are you hearing from people on the ground? I mean, I'm guessing that there was some apprehension from people from out of town because of all of the violence that has been happening over the past couple of weeks. The killing of Alton Sterling, for example, Philando Castile, and then the killing of police officers in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, there definitely was apprehension coming into yesterday. I know even on Sunday, talking with people, we were like, well, this was a good Sunday, but, you know, the convention hasn't started yet. But there is just a general sense of relief amongst everyone that so far we've been able to have a calm convention, on the outside at least. And just we're all happy that it's been safe for everyone so far.
Right. And I forgot to mention, unfortunately, the police shooting in Baton Rouge. Andrew, can you talk about the protesters, the demonstrators? What are they talking about? Obviously, they are there voicing major opposition to the anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim rhetoric of Donald Trump. What are you hearing on the streets?
What we're hearing is a lot from people that reside in Cleveland, and they just want to talk about how even though that, like, this is where the Republican National Convention is, that there are, like, they want to make sure that people know that there are people in Cleveland who do care about providing a safe space for, like, immigrants and those who practice Islam. And they just want, the main thing that they want to know is that they want to be respectful to the fact that the RNC is here, but they want people to know that there is more that Cleveland has to offer than just that perspective.
And yesterday there was an End Poverty Now march. What's happening in the next couple of days? What are you planning to cover?
So today and Wednesday, there aren't as many protests scheduled. Thursday is another big day for our protest coverage, as it's, you know, it's the big day with Trump's speech and all. So the next couple of days, we're not doing as much protest coverage, but Thursday we're ramping that all up again, and hopefully things will continue to be peaceful.
All right. Well, I know you have to leave us, so thank you for joining us. Thanks for your reporting.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Andrew Meyer is a reporter with Youth Radio. He is 22. This is his third convention. And sticking with us for the rest of the hour are two guests, Larry Bresler, Executive Director of Organize Ohio. They were one of the organizers of yesterday's End Poverty Now march in Cleveland. And Bill Taylor is Executive Director of Philly.FYI. They are organizing the March for Bernie and other events during the Democratic National Convention next week in Philadelphia. And we've been talking about the open carry law that's been getting a lot of attention. It is the first convention in a state with an open carry law. And as Larry told us earlier, in the 1.5 square mile zone where the protesters and the demonstrators are, you cannot carry string, tape, certain umbrellas, a squirt gun, but you can carry a gun, a loaded gun, right, Larry?
That's correct.
Well, if you have any questions or comments about protests and the rules nowadays that that people are dealing with, a 1.5 square mile zone, if you've been to past convention protests, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Larry, tell us about yesterday's End Poverty Now march.
The intent of our march was to get out the message that to the Republicans in this case, but also to the Democrats, that there's not been any discussion, any effort to address the structural issues of poverty. Mm-hmm. You know, we in the United States signed on to the United Declaration of Human Rights in 1948, and part of that is Articles 23, 25, and 26, which include the right to food and housing and health care and education and living wage jobs, none of which has ever been adhered to. And we're calling up, the march was really directed in terms of calling people to move forward with that. We had, one of the things that's happened with all the marches is that people, that there's the attendance has been lower than was anticipated. In our case, we had about 2,000 people, but we expected substantially more. But one of the things we were hearing time and time again before the march was that people who intended to come is that they got very much scared away with the potential violence, mm-hmm, and everything that had happened, both that happened over the course of the last week, and also the stuff about people who said they were coming in and bringing guns from both sides of the spectrum, and people just had been enormously scared away. And so the numbers of people who have been protesting up to this point have been substantially less than had been anticipated.
Which makes sense because of what's been happening,
yes,
over the last couple of weeks. So, Larry, since you did take part in or organize the End Poverty Now March, tell us just a little bit about what's happening with Ohio's economy. According to the Columbus Dispatch, there are now 53,000 more Ohio children living in poverty than during the recession in 2008.
Well, it's interesting in general. Governor Kasich always talks about the miracle of Ohio in terms of the economy, but the truth of the matter is that our economy is some incredible number of, I was going to say months, but actually years at this point, where the growth in our economy has been less than the rest of the country. And meanwhile, you know, in urban areas, not to mention in some rural areas as well, you know, they've been really hit the hardest. So in Cleveland, the city of Cleveland itself, where the convention is happening, we have a poverty rate of 37%, and 53% of our children live in poverty, second highest in the country.
Mm.
And so as a result of that, you know, you have children, you know, families whose children are not getting nutritious food, who in many cases they have families that are living in incredibly poor housing, or in many cases, you know, families that are homeless, and we're having and there's no response to that from the government in terms of addressing those kinds of issues.
Larry, we're going to talk about media coverage of the convention on Friday, and I'm just wondering, since there are 15,000 journalists in Cleveland, have any journalists called you? Journalists, did they come to the End Poverty rally yesterday to cover these issues?
Oh yeah, we had a huge number of journalists that were there. I don't know to what extent that they covered the critical issues that we were trying to present, but certainly we got a lot of coverage. I really think that so many of the journalists who came were looking to see what kind of problems were going to arise,
right?
Because that's what gets most of the coverage.
Right.
And our rally and march, thankfully, was peaceful, nonviolent. To the best of my knowledge, there were no arrests, notwithstanding, you know, that we all marched in the street, but that we were able to control it very well.
And Bill, in Philadelphia next week, are there going to be any protests focusing on poverty issues?
Yes, there is. There's also going to be a protest with a group that we're aligned with, and many that's called the March for Our Lives, and they're doing their own march against poverty, and with many of the same kinds of themes that we've done ours. And in fact, they had a big group contingent come up from Philadelphia to join our march, and we plan to send a substantial contingent down to Philadelphia for their march. And that march is going to be happening on Monday, beginning at 2 o'clock in Philadelphia.
And that is Bill Taylor, executive of Philly.fyi. They're organizing the March for Bernie and other events during the Democratic Convention next week in Philadelphia. Larry Bresler is executive director of Organize Ohio, an organization that supports grassroots organizers. They were one of the organizers of yesterday's End Poverty Now March in Cleveland. Today, we are talking about the state of protests during a convention. And as Larry said, they're not getting the numbers they expected, probably because so many people were apprehensive about the police shootings recently and also the shootings of police in Dallas and Baton Rouge. And Larry, what are your thoughts on what you're seeing on the streets, just in terms of the militarization of police? $20 million has been spent on riot and security gear. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security are in Cleveland. 3,000 police are on the ground, some police from as far away as here in California.
That's correct, and there's a huge amount. The closer you get to downtown Cleveland, the more police you see just every place, and block after block after block. It's a little disquieting, and very disquieting, frankly. But on the other hand, to the best of my knowledge, in terms of what I've seen up to this point, that for the most part. They've acted professionally, and there's not been substantial incidents.
There have been reports that prior to the convention, the FBI and Homeland Security was questioning activists, knocking on their doors.
That's true.
Can you tell us about that?
I can tell you that there were several that I knew that the FBI went to. All of whom, I might add, were ones that were not planning anything, were not part of anything, and there was no reason to think they were going to be part of anything. And so it was very disturbing. One was the cousin of Tamir Rice that was visited. Tamir Rice was a 12-year-old who was shot by the police when he was carrying a toy gun. Another was somebody who has been an environmental activist for many years, but was planning nothing of any short shape, form, or size. Another was a person out of Tampa, Florida, of all places, who was coming up to join our march and bring a group of people, and he was visited by the Secret Service and was very rattled by the fact that he was visited by the Secret Service. None of these people, you know, have been planning or been involved with anything that would be even marginally violent.
And Bill, do you know, is this happening in Philadelphia in the lead up to the DNC convention or the Democratic convention?
What I do know of is that, this is basically the local PD has been calling organizers that have applied for permits to see if they're still organizing. And I think this is being done not only in Ohio, but Philadelphia as well. They're trying to really scare and deter people from this process. And the reason why is they want us voiceless. I mean, this voter suppression and election fraud, when they suppress our vote, they basically suppress our voice. The less people that show up to these events, the less potent our voice is. So what they're doing out there, it's like the establishment has their tactics for Philadelphia as well. And one of the ways that they did that to deter people from this process was Bernie endorsing Hillary. Now, he politically had his own reasons. I was on the call to the delegates, and, you know, he stated his reasons, which I don't think that's actually public. But even regardless of his reasons, it deterred people from this process. And my opinion on it is, you know, money talks, so we must gather in the streets and speak louder. And they're doing everything possible so we don't gather in the streets. But we have to stand strong, and we can't get scared of their tactics. We're peace, nonviolent protests or demonstrations. And with that being, you know, in mind, you should not fear anything. But, you know, don't fear. The only thing you should fear is fear itself. I think you're talking about apples and oranges when it comes to the Republican convention compared to the Democratic convention. So it's a much different environment. Now, I do know it was said that the local police department, that I verified, if they were federal agents, I couldn't tell you. But I do know some of the folks organizing rallies for Philadelphia, it startled them. And I think he said it perfectly earlier. It definitely rattles them, you know.
Maggie Rice, an organizer with Food Not Bombs, told The Intercept that members of her group were visited by police but felt too rattled to speak to a reporter. The group isn't planning to stage protests but has applied for permits to be in the event zone to feed protesters and residents. And the FBI confirmed with The Intercept that visits have taken place. Quote, in preparation for the upcoming RNC, the FBI, along with our federal, state, and local partners, has been working collaboratively with members of the community. This is according to a spokesperson with the FBI in Cleveland. As part of this preparation, law enforcement is reaching out to individuals known in the community who may have information that could help ensure a safe and secure environment during the RNC, end quote. Cleveland's police department did not respond to The Intercept's requests for comment. And we'll put that story up at yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about protests at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, this week. Luckily, yesterday, the first day, was very peaceful. Nothing happened. And I keep saying luckily because it's the first time that a convention is being held in an open carry state. This means that people can carry loaded guns in a 1.5 square mile zone where pro-Trump and anti-Trump demonstrators are basically meeting. In some cases, police are on bikes trying to separate them. They cannot bring a squirt gun into this area, but they can bring a loaded gun. And we're talking about this with Larry Bressler, ED with Organize Ohio. Bill Taylor is ED of Philly.FYI. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in today's conversation on Your Call. You can call us by telephone. You can send us an email. You can go to our website, or you can tweet us. If you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone, our phone number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Our website is yourcallradio.org, and our Twitter handle is @yourcallradio. Coming up in a half hour here on KLW, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC, amongst many other things. They'll be talking about Russia's possible non-participation in the Olympics this year. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Jules Boykoff will be here to talk about his new book, Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. He says the Olympics are a bonanza for the ruling class, and Rio shows us this in an extreme form. The Games kick off next month in Rio, even though the country's economic crisis has caused a total breakdown in public security, health, and education. So we're going to talk with Jules about this and what a more equitable Olympics would look like. And then on Thursday, we will talk about Donald Trump. Where does he stand on important issues? And we'll talk about the Republican platform, the most extreme in the party's history. And reportedly, Donald Trump wasn't involved in the writing of the platform at all. That's on Thursday. And then Friday, it's our media roundtable. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about protests at the Republican convention in Cleveland, Ohio this week, and Philadelphia next week for the Democratic convention. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about protests, the event zones where people are basically allowed to be in one specific space? And if you've ever been to a protest, what was your experience like? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us @yourcallradio. Larry Bresler is executive director of Organize Ohio. He was one of the organizers of yesterday's End Poverty Now march in Cleveland. Bill Taylor is executive director of Philly.fyi. They are organizing the March for Bernie and other events during the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia next week. And now I would like to welcome April Glazer to the show. April is a journalist and fellow at Wired Magazine. She's a former staff activist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Her latest piece for Slate is called How Protesters at the RNC Can Protect Themselves from Digital Surveillance. Hi, April. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. And I just finished my fellowship at Wired.
Oh, okay. Congratulations. Thanks for joining us. So your piece is really interesting. You focus on digital surveillance, and you have a sort of, an FYI piece for people who want to protect themselves and their cell phones. So tell us a little bit about some of the digital surveillance that's going on in Cleveland.
Sure. I mean, and so digital surveillance happens all the time, all over the country. We know about NSA programs that, you know, read information from our emails. But in Cleveland, the Cleveland police are not alone. They have been joined by the FBI, by the Department of Homeland Security, Secret Service, and just about every, you know, federal law enforcement agency, as well as the California State Highway Patrol and law enforcement agencies across the country that have come in to help patrol Cleveland, and that includes a wide array of digital surveillance. Cleveland has installed, we know from a PowerPoint slide that was released by the city, you know, over 100 cameras across the city of Ohio, and Cleveland also has automatic license plate readers that are probably being used. We don't know for sure if Stingray devices are used. Those are devices that are used to collect and intercept cell phone calls and text messages and get data on those, but we think that they're probably being used because the technology is owned by the federal government. And of course, the camera footage is being probably, you know, processed because we know about these programs through the FBI's facial recognition database and that software as well. So there's an extensive amount of digital surveillance happening throughout the week.
And who makes the decisions about this surveillance?
It is a coordinated effort amongst, you know, all the agencies. There's procedure that the Department of Homeland Security and FBI follow when there's a national security event of this magnitude. And so they, you know, are following procedure. But, of course, it's amped up every time because, you know, everyone's on high alert after what happened in Dallas and other shootings across the country in Baton Rouge.
Right. And you report that while most people will not get arrested in Cleveland, everyone in the area will get caught in law enforcement's surveillance dragnet.
That's right. So, you know, if you're using your cell phone and there's a stingray up, which, you know, is a high probability of happening, they're not very forthcoming, of course, with the surveillance equipment that they have. We are able to find some things. But if you're using your phone and a stingray is up, which is likely the case, they know who you're calling and when. The stingrays have the capability. We don't know if they're going to be used for this, but we know that they're capable of receiving the content of those text messages and phone calls. We are sure that, you know, these cameras are up. And, you know, if you go outside and the camera's up, then you're part of that dragnet. If you use your phone, you're part of that dragnet. And they've set up information processing centers just for this event to clear all of that surveillance data that they are accumulating and process it just for the RNC. They set up makeshift surveillance centers.
And what happens with all of this information? Because we've done so many shows about, you know, the Edward Snowden leaks, for example, and this information could be held for many, many years.
That's a great question. I mean, I wish we knew exactly what they did with this information, but we do know about a lot of the infrastructure that's set up to handle that information, right? So we know that, you know, surveillance information from the Cleveland police and from police across Ohio, or at least northeastern Ohio, go to the Northeastern Ohio Fusion Center. And a fusion center is a Department of Homeland Security run kind of surveillance clearinghouse and data clearinghouse where the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, the DEA, and of course local law enforcement and state law enforcement share information that's collected. The information that goes through a fusion center, you know, is possibly saved for a long time. The NSA has huge data storage facilities. For instance, in Utah, there's one that, you know, is capable of, you know, processing the world's internet traffic. You know, these huge storage facilities are owned by the NSA, set up across the country. So they very well could be stored there, but it's, of course, hard to say.
We have a question about license plates from a listener. Let's hear from George in San Francisco. Hi, George.
Hello. Don't you think that one of the features of this surveillance scape that you're describing would also be routinely scanning all the license plates to see what record is or is not on those?
April, do you know about that?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, he wanted to know about the surveillance of license plates in the area.
In Cleveland, you know, again, it's hard to say. We do know, thanks to some documents that were obtained by the ACLU from Freedom of Information Act requests, that Cleveland does have a license plate reader. Of course, since this is an all-hands-on-deck effort nationally, more might have been brought in from other departments or from federal agencies. But, you know, they're set up usually in busy intersections, and they take note of when a car passes by. And then, of course, if you pass by repeatedly, they kind of know where you're going. And, of course, location can be tracked through cell phones as well. So it's using all of the information they can get, including license plate readers. They can paint a pretty detailed portrait of your activities.
April Glazer's latest piece in Slate is how protesters at the RNC can protect themselves from digital surveillance. And thank you for the call, George. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have any questions or comments about protests and demonstrations at the conventions, the police response, this digital surveillance dragnet that is in place, we'd love to hear from you. Email feedback at yourcallradio.org or you can tweet us at Your Call Radio. Larry, you're in Cleveland. Is this getting a lot of attention with activists?
It's getting no attention.
None. Did you know this was happening?
I did not.
What do you think?
That's scary. And one of the things I have a question about is once this is over, is it possible through the Freedom of Information Act to get information that this has been done and then still being kept?
Well, a lot of the information, I spoke to somebody from the National Lawyers Guild in Cleveland, that chapter, and they were the ones that alerted me to the surveillance centers that were set up just for the RNC and to a PowerPoint that was written by the City of Cleveland. So some of this information is out there and it's linked to in my article. But what happens frequently, and of course, you know, you can request for this. Freedom of Information Act requests are at your disposal, and you can try to find out what your city has obtained. But just to let you know, often cities keep this gear that they get. Hmm. And this gear was purchased in part from a $50 million grant that Congress gives, political conventions every year. To buy equipment, to buy equipment they may need to handle, and that often includes a wide array of surveillance gear.
And a $50 million grant, according to reports, $20 million of that grant was spent on riot gear and equipment. Do you know, April, which companies get the most money from this grant? I mean, which companies are making these technologies?
Well, there are all kinds of companies that are involved in building, the different technologies, whether it's, the companies that make the Stingrays or the companies that make cameras. There's all different kinds of cameras that they buy. I'm not sure these specific vendors that they go to for this. The riot gear is a different company, for instance, than the 10,000 handcuffs that they bought.
Right.
With that federal grant as well. So this is definitely a booming business for those who are in the security hardware, business for sure.
Yeah, very booming. I mean, you linked to the Washington Post piece about this $50 million grant, and according to the Washington Post, the city... The list is really long. In Cleveland, 2,000 sets of full riot gear, 2,000 26-inch retractable steel batons, 2,500 steel barriers, 15 motorcycles, 310 police bikes, 10,000, as you said, plastic handcuffs. The list just goes on and on. Body armor, video surveillance. And April, should we assume that the same surveillance is going to take place in Philadelphia next week?
Sure. You know, I think that this is pretty much, we saw surveillance like this during the Super Bowl. Not, of course, the riot gear, but a surveillance infrastructure set up around that event, which is also classified as a large national security event because so many people are watching on TV. It's one of the most watched television broadcasts in America, right? So anytime there's something that's considered a place where a lot of people are going to be gathering and it's a high-profile event, particularly if it's a political event like this, you're going to see this level of coordinated security. And, they've even obtained, for instance, 5 portable surveillance trailers, that have cameras that our law enforcement are watching all the time. There's so much gear that has been ordered for this. And, yes, we can expect this in Philadelphia, but every city is different, and we have to look at what southeastern Pennsylvania and counties have obtained in terms of Stingrays or in terms of automatic license plate readers. And the ACLU might have documents that they've obtained on that.
Bill, are activists in Philadelphia talking about this?
Well, the city of Philadelphia actually received $43 million, but I think Philadelphia is a lot more, I hate to say advanced on this subject, than Cleveland, Ohio. So they are already geared up beforehand. So $43 million just adds to what they currently have. As far as their tactics, I don't think it's going to be any different. These are, federal events. Half of our government's going to basically be in one building at one time, and that's what they use to justify it. Now, the sad part about this is they use the excuse to protect the people, but it's not. It's actually to protect the 1%. And I'm going to use an example, like the cameras on red lights. That's to catch any kind of illegal activity, but if you get robbed at your house, They won't check those cameras. But if a person loses out on $200,000 or more, they'll check the cameras. So who are those cameras really protecting? It's the 1%, the wealthy. So they're doing this and say to protect the people, but essentially it's not. I mean, I don't expect anything different in Philadelphia than is going on in Cleveland, Ohio, as far as, you know, NSA tactics and, you know, just Homeland Security in general. They're pretty ramped up themselves. I know the issues with them, I only imagine with NSA. Me personally, I've already experienced a number of tactics, but to be as transparent as possible is our overall goal. You know, we're big advocates for peace and nonviolent, and you know, being transparent, I think, is one of the keys to this. Just to give you an example, I'm personally in a commercial area, and there's a van parked out back that, you know, I own a landscaping business, so that there's a cage in the front, but none around the windows. It's completely blacked out the way that they did it. Plus, I know all the businesses in the area that they don't belong to anybody there. I've been there over 10 years. But see, the first day that we spotted this van, because I have cameras that's around my house, you know, I went up onto the van and knocked on the van. How you guys doing? I'll bring them a coffee. You know, I approach it a lot differently. We shouldn't have to undergo this kind of surveillance. You're losing your freedom. Yeah. In my opinion, this is a dictatorship. There's nothing democratic, or this is not a democracy. We're living in a police state, and that's the sad part. They're using our protection as an excuse to ramp things up. You know, to give you an example, they're saying, and I agree, there is, you know, there is fear of a terroristic attack. But, you know, let's talk about the real numbers. You're 53 more times likely to die by the hands of an officer than you do a terrorist, and we're giving them more weapons? That's uncalled for. It's uncalled for.
That is Bill Taylor, Executive Director of Philly.FYI. They are organizing marches and events during the Democratic Convention next week in Philadelphia. It's interesting, Bill, when you look at Cleveland. I mean, you've got pro-Trump supporters and anti-Trump demonstrators in the same small space, 1.5 square miles. Again, Ohio's an open carry state. Luckily, yesterday was peaceful, but at around 6 o'clock yesterday, a group of 10 men who said they were with West Ohio Minutemen walked through the streets openly carrying rifles and pistols. We know that 1,000 spaces in jails in Cleveland were set aside for potential arrests. And according to Philly.com, Philadelphia's shuttered Holmesburg Prison is going to be available next week for arrested protesters. Sean Hayes, a spokeswoman with the city's prison system, said the facility is being readied on an if-needed basis for the convention next week. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think everything here is a tactic. One, what you have is they're preying on the fear. So they're able to justify putting $40, $50 million worth of military gear into the hands of the already militarized police. Then on the other hand, you're deterring people from coming to the streets by these fear tactics because they fear what may happen. As far as the prison, they did reopen the prison. I'm a little unhappy about what's happening in Philadelphia because they lowered the fines for a couple different things. They lowered the fines for public intoxication, public urination, blocking roads and bridges. They'll issue $100 to $300 fine for those charges. But you have folks like the Marxist Group Springs that have come here to you know, they're purposely wanting to be arrested as a, you know, as a statement. You know, they're saying that they're willing to risk arrest for the issues that they believe in. So that concerns me because, again, it's almost as if they have to turn violent just to express themselves freely.
And who are you talking about?
A Democracy Spring, they organized for a march from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C.
Right.
It was a big sit-in. I think it was the largest arrest, you know, public sit-in arrest in history. But, again, I think this is all a tactic to, one, suppress the people from showing up, two, give military gear to the people that really don't need it, and it's placing everybody in a situation that, you know, it's uncalled for. In Cleveland, Ohio, lives could be lost. Philadelphia, I think the city itself has the best they could address the issue. I don't know where else to go with it from there.
Bill Taylor is executive director of Philly.fyi, organizing next week's protests at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Bill, are you hearing from other groups that are planning to protest at the DNC? I mean, are you expecting, you know, arguments between Bernie supporters and Hillary supporters, or are you expecting protesters, all protesters, to be protesting the Democrats?
Well, you're talking to the right guy there. I started working on permits a long, long time ago. In fact, the amount of permits that we have been awarded, if you take the zones, the locations, and the days, and you break them down, you know, I've actually been awarded 26 permits in all. And even I question that, because that could be a tactic to, you know, some the folks that aren't jealous or envious, they're looking at me with a crooked eye going, how do you get all the permits? But the reason why I did that is because I applied for one specific permit at National Parks and Rec, and they had said Bernie Sanders applied for one, and he asked for any available spots. So a light bulb went off, and I literally applied for all permits to be able to offer Sanders permits if he needed them. That was also to stop Hillary supporters. So just being from the Bernie side of it, you know, being a political activist, the goal with all those permits was to stop any Hillary supporters. We do know Trump supporters applied for permits at FDR Park. This is, you know, it's a concern. Every voice kind of matters. You don't want to silence any voices, but that may make an environment that's unhealthy for Philadelphia. I kind of fought very hard to see to it. I you know, I didn't think Trump supporters would be an issue. I really didn't. I didn't. That came out of left field. I was trying to stop Hillary supporters, to be honest with you. But one thing's for sure, the city of Philadelphia will fill the burn. Not only this organization, but there's you know, 30, 40, possibly more organizations in Philadelphia, you know, that are, if they're not working together, they agree on solidarity, and their hearts and minds are all in the right places. So as far as the streets go, it's beautiful. And to be honest with you, this organization, we sat down at the table with the city to secure a number of benefits. We also sat down at the table with Homeland Security. We fought for no military gear, you know, being out in the open. We want to have the environment not a tense environment for everybody. So we fought for no military gear. That 3 months ago, I believe the National Guard was activated, but now they're deactivated. You can't, they, you know, the local PD, the Philadelphia, they don't know they can't stop what goes on inside the convention, but outside on the streets, there will be no National Guard. There will be no military gear.
So when you're talking about permits, these are basically official rallies, official demonstrations.
Correct. Now, even though we had 26, what we did was we worked with as many local grassroots as possible. One of the beautiful things about Bernie is, and this is why so many folks, you know, are intrigued by him and engage in the political process, because he hits so many issues. So what I've done is we try to cover all those issues and really add a very diverse crowd as far as grassroots activists. So honestly, out of those 26, I think we personally, as far as rallies, currently, there's...
And Bill, I'm sorry, we're almost out of time. I just want to ask April one more question. Given what you've reported on, April, with all of the surveillance, the cell phones, we just heard that, well, the FBI is knocking on doors of potential protesters. What are your thoughts about the right of the people to assemble in the United States in the year 2016?
Well, they still have that right. It's actually part of our First Amendment rights. You know, part of the ability to protest and to organize and to push for social change in a democracy requires people to come together to do that in a coordinated way. But certainly, if you engage in protest, then you are under further scrutiny by the FBI and by local law enforcement and Department of Homeland Security, and that has a chilling effect. That has a very serious chilling effect, and I certainly hope that people are not dissuaded from collectivizing and pushing for political change through organizing and activism.
And also, you can be arrested for simply showing up. I was at the RNC convention demonstrations in 2004 and was kind of shocked. You would be in a park, for example, and all of a sudden the police would show up and they would surround everyone with these orange mesh fences and haul everyone off to jail.
that's true. That's called peddling. And if, for instance, in Ohio, demonstrators should be extra cautious because, you know, under the city's flash mob law, if you show up to an event that you learned about on social media to quote unquote commit a crime, and you know what constitutes, you know, if somebody's committing a crime within the event, does that mean that the whole event is there to commit the crime? You know, and your cell phone is then classified as a criminal tool because you learned about it to get to the gathering, and you can be arrested then for using your cell phone, right? So there's so many scenarios where it's really quite easy to just be at the wrong place at the wrong time and be susceptible to being thrown in jail. And of course, that can affect your job standing, your family life. It's expensive. It's a terrible thing for anyone to have to go through just for, you know, being at a place where there happens to be a political protest happening, whether they're filming it or involved with it in some way.
And just quickly, some of your suggestions: lock your phone, create a very strong password, use encrypted messaging, and then be prepared to film. And now we've got Facebook Live, so you can go live right from the scene. Any other suggestions to keep yourself safe and secure?
Sure. You know, it's very important that you also set your phone lock, screen lock, to not only have a password, but to lock immediately, not to have it lock after 3 minutes, and to not use the biometric touch ID if you have an iPhone, because you can be compelled to use your finger to unlock it, but you can't be compelled to give away your password. It's also probably important to log out of your accounts and to be careful about the subject line of your emails. But really, use that encrypted messaging. A fantastic app for that is built by the nonprofit Open Whisper Systems, and it's called Signal. And it allows you to be encrypted between an Android and an iPhone, unlike iMessages, which only offers encrypted messaging between iPhones. So there's a number of tools that people can use to kind of circumvent this surveillance and make your communication unreadable. And it's totally legal to use these tools.
April Glazer is a journalist. She also worked at the EFF. You can find her piece, How Protesters at the RNC Can Protect Themselves from Digital Surveillance, at yourcallradio.org. Larry Bresler is executive director of Organize Ohio, and Bill Taylor is executive director of Philly.fyi. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, Jules Boykoff joins us to discuss his new book, Power Games, A Political History of the Olympics. He says the Olympics are a bonanza for the ruling class, and Rio shows us this in an extreme form. The Games begin in Rio, Brazil next month, even though the country's economic crisis has caused a total breakdown in public security, health, and education. So what would a more equitable Olympics look like? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.